So today I'm talking to Luke Taylor. You're the Liberal Democrat MP for Sutton and Cheam and party spokesperson for London. Yesterday, Sarah Davy was talking about a call to rejoin the EU Migration and Asylum Pact, which has been in the making for about 10 years, I think, within the EU. Some figures were bandied around that it will cost us 100 million a year, with a potential saving of 5 billion, which is
Yes,
they've
yeah.
equated to what our failing asylum system as it is now. There must be a hitch to this. What is it? Because it sounds too good to be true. We're going to have to take in a quota of refugees. Who's going to decide the quota we're going to have to take in? If we find some of those refugees aren't genuine refugees, will we be able to send them back? All these sorts of questions are being bandied about.
Yeah, it's a really complicated situation. But what boils my blood is seeing Nigel Farage and the Conservatives standing on the beach in Dover and pointing at the problem that they created. This is entirely down to a combination of Brexit, which Nigel Farage birthed, and then the Conservatives for delivering a deal which excluded us from the system that both shares information and shares the burden of asylum seekers and refugees across Europe. It is astonishing the cheek that they have to criticize anything that's happening to do with the system. You have Robert Jenrick, who stopped processing of asylum seekers to deliberately build up a backlog and cause the explosion in the demand for hotels. Whether he's a conservative or reform, he is part of the problem. So what you need to do is look at what will work. What we need to do is remove the incentive for those desperate, desperate people to try and cross the English Channel. And that incentive is there because the UK is currently outside of any system to share the burden to accept and to process asylum seekers. So it is entirely, if you look at where people want to go to claim support, getting to the South Coast, getting to the UK, is incentivized under the current system. To remove that incentive, you join a system where our responsibility is shared with the rest of Europe, and you can then stop those crossings, because joining the system, applying in France would just be the same as applying here. But the whole of Europe, all of the countries involved, then would deal evenly, equally, with both the opportunities that some of those people fleeing persecution offer, but also we will be able to deliver the incredibly important historic responsibility that we've always had for providing refuge to those who are being targeted overseas. Now, we need to make sure as well that safe routes are available, that you can apply from countries that are oppressing their own people, and that doesn't happen at the moment. But we've got to talk about the big policies and the big changes that will enable this to happen. And ultimately, this is down to our Brexit, our re removal of ourselves from all the agreements that used to share responsibilities across Europe. That is Nigel Farage's fault. That is the Conservatives' fault for delivering a deal that was so awful for us that it's created this push-pull incentive for desperate, desperate people to risk their lives to get here. The Lib Dems are the only party who are talking about a solution that will fix all of the challenges around distributing refugees about and ultimately stopping those dangerous, dangerous crossings. So I'm really proud that we've announced this policy. Hopefully it'll persuade the Labour government to move their move where they're looking at for these policies and for their solutions. And what I do not want to see on my television is Nigel Farage and the Conservatives saying that they've got a solution to the problem that they caused in the first place. It's distasteful, and everybody should be, as infuriated as I am that they've got the cheek to suggest that they are part of the solution.
So it involves mandatory screening at the point of entry. So will be France, obviously France, Italy getting a lot of migrants. So are Greece. So they will be screened in those individual countries, and then they will be then allocated to other European countries who have less. Is that how it's going to work?
Largely, yes, it will mean that those who have family links, who have language skills, who have skills themselves, can then be distributed to the right place around Europe. But what it does is it completely removes any incentive to travel across Europe to get to the channel, to cross the channel to get to the UK. But it also means that we would be part of the conversation that defines what a fair share is. It means we'd be part of the conversation that defines what our border security is around that group of countries. You know, we have to be part of the conversation. We have to have a voice. We have to lead in this situation, rather than after Brexit, where the Tories removed our say in having a leading voice in these situations. You know, this isn't reversing the Brexit. This isn't undermining democracy. It's coming up with a solution to the intractable problem that was created by Nigel Farage and the Conservatives in the first place.
And do you think Andy Burnham is going to receive this?
Hey, look, we gotta be optimistic, right? He tells us he's going to do politics differently. Opposition parties are there to scrutinise and to suggest better policy. I think that we do a very good job of doing that. The Tories are not an effective opposition. They are playing political points and games, whereas the Liberal Democrats are coming up time and time again with policies that actually fix things. And hopefully, Andy Burnham will be more likely to kind of incorporate some of those policies into how he runs his government.
Good. So moving on, Old Oak Common. You visited there yesterday. It's a major West London regeneration area. What did you see yesterday when you went down there?
Yeah, so I was actually a bit further away in the Shepherd's Bush kind of Westfield area, where Imperial College has a huge campus there, and they are really at the forefront of UK innovation in technology, in computing, and it's where I was an Imperial student back in the day, and it's where they are trying to come up with the next generation of UK innovation, businesses, spin outs. So that comes from where research has identified really great opportunities and turn them into companies, turn them into opportunities for our country. The site there in Shepherd's Bush is just across the way from Old Oak Common, and it's what they call what is it? West Tech, I think, is the latest branding for it. West Tech. But it has that connectivity to Heathrow, to High Speed 2, to Crossrail. It's a really exciting area. And with my London spokes hat on, what I'm always interested in doing is going around London to see places that are doing things really, really well and understanding how we can share that knowledge. And for me, sharing that knowledge back to Sutton, where we've got the London Cancer Hub. So one of the brilliant things that they do at this scale space, they call it, is get really smart people all together in the same place. And some of them might be working on computing, some of them might be working on AI, some might be working on drug discoveries, and have them working in a location where they can kind of have collisions, they call it, collisions at lunch, talking after work about an application that might help a similar project with a different way to approach a problem. And you get a huge benefit from sharing of skills, from sharing of perspectives, but also getting that outside view. And so these are things that when we build the London Cancer Hub here in Sutton, we need to make sure that we've got those spaces where colleagues and people from different groups, different, slightly different applications can collide, as it were, and kind of share those ideas to really make the best of the opportunity, as we're trying to do here in Sutton, the Cancer Hub, as they're doing at scale space in West London. And anywhere I can go around London and see some of these incredible spaces is, you know, it's a privilege for me. And hopefully then as a politician, are able to kind of share that knowledge, share that experience, and share where things are going really well, and ultimately just be really excited about the opportunities.
Yeah, we're great innovators in this country, and we need to move that innovator into potential business opportunities, don't we?
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's turning theoretical research into application. America's very good at that. They're very good at monetizing things. They're very good at turning that, you know, that huge amount of research money that they that we all invest into then product. So, you know, you've got Silicon Valley that turned kind of the the revolution of computing into products, into software, into
Yeah.
hugely valuable companies. There's an opportunity for us to do the same, but we've got to create the spaces where these things happen. And it's great to see around London, we're seeing those sorts of places pop up, Scale Space in West Tech and the London Cancer Hub here in Sutton.
Right, so that's good. Moving on, I like it. This is finism. So I love this. Let's relate it to you as an engineer and relate it to the three major bridges in London, Hammersmith, Royal Albert, and now Vauxhall, that are built by the Victorians. They're falling apart. You suggest very correctly that when the Greater London Council was abolished, the bridges were transferred to borough councils, and that's basically why they've been mismanaged, because funds have probably been distributed elsewhere. They probably feel they've been distributed in a good place. But is it time now to get Andy Burnham, as he says, he's going to do all these good things, to get one body together to find a good engineering company and to sort this problem out as a whole rather than these individual problems?
Well, it's exactly it. And when you've got a London Borough Council having to make decisions between paying for emergency accommodation for its residents or fund £150 million worth of repairs to a bridge, those are really difficult decisions, and councils just aren't equipped to do that. What we need to do is come up with a way, and I'm starting to look at really kind of coming up with proper policy proposals to really rescue that infrastructure. And bridges are a really good example of how much we depend on that cross river connectivity in London. But you've listed them there. So Hammersmith Bridge is closed, has been now for 5 years, 6 years, compared to the 4 years that it took to build and open the current bridge in the first place back in the 1880s. You've got Royal Albert Bridge closed for, and they say, about a year for strengthening works. Let's see when and if they reopen that. And Vauxhall Bridge has had sequential weight limits imposed upon it because the structure just isn't able to keep up with modern demands. And those modern demands are bigger, heavier cars, bigger, heavier buses, bigger, heavier HGVs, more regular traffic. And we just haven't kept care of that infrastructure. And this is finism, is the kind of trying to capture what all those politicians, and frankly, it is politicians, have said over the years of, well, no, look, it literally hasn't fallen into the Thames yet, so therefore it's fine. And it's not actually collapsing. And we've used the bridge as an example, but you've got so much Victorian infrastructure around the country in London that is not being looked after enough. And what we need is the political courage, and that is politicians like me, to say this is going to be expensive, but we need to do it because the consequences are going to be horrendous. But you also need to kind of have that sequential improvement upgrade throughout its life and not just leave it, because demands change, the requirements change, and unless you keep up with it, then you're going to end up with a piece of infrastructure, a train station, a tube network. The example that I like to look at as an example where we got it right was with the London Super Sewer. That was opened a couple of years ago. It took a huge amount of money, I think 5, 6 billion pounds, to build a brand new sewer alongside Bazalgette's original to divert sewage from the Thames to a new sewage treatment works. We took the difficult decisions. It took about 20 years to bring together a commission, to come up with options, to get the funding model in place. But it now means that we're discharging considerably less sewage into the Thames, which I think we could all agree is a good thing. But it's something where the political courage was taken. We found the ways to pay for it, and we solved a problem. It's rare that we come up with an example of where we fixed something and we made it better. But what we need to see is that extended to London's bridges, to its stations, to its overpasses. You look at Hammersmith flyover, Croydon flyover and overpass, which are really struggling to keep up with demand and may well need to be shut and repaired for extended periods because we haven't kept up with demand. So this is anti, well, this is finism, which we have to end, is that attitude of saying, no, look, we'll wait till next year to invest in it. We'll wait till next year to come up with a plan. So hopefully, as a Liberal Democrat, we can come up with proposals to say to London, look, we want to look after our country and our infrastructure for the next century, as we have tempted to do with that Victorian infrastructure. We need to, really approach it in a grown-up way and show the leadership that says, yeah, like it is going to take a bit of money to fix this, but these are the huge advantages, but also these are the huge risks that if we don't.
Yeah. And of course, if you remember in the Second World War, Sir Alan Beckett built the Mulberry Harbours, and they are still standing today. So we are
Yeah,
a
really good
nation of
example.
bridge builders.
Well, we are. We've got a huge capability, and it's exactly the same conversation as the opportunities from engineering and innovation and computing and all those sorts of stuff. We just need to look around and say, okay, no, we need to show the leadership. We need to show the ambition to do things better rather than just saying everything is fine.
And also, I know AI is becoming a really big thing, but AI can't build a bridge. So hopefully that's something for the
Absolutely.
future. Right,
Exactly right.
let's.
But what it can do is potentially work out the most effective way to, with what the replacement is or maintenance or whatever. You've got to use
Yeah.
it, but you've got to keep up to date.
Absolutely. The government is planning to overhaul the planning system. Angela Rayner was on the radio yesterday saying about the drive to build lots more council houses. Are you seeing those being built in Sutton and Cheam or plans
So
to build those?
yeah, so Sutton, we're really proud of building homes. We have been really open and honest with our local residents to say that we need to build homes. We need to build them for local residents so that they can stay in Sutton, so they can afford a home. We need to provide council houses for those who are on lower incomes and cannot afford the private rental market or to buy a home for themselves. We have a local plan that we're just finishing consulting on at the moment, but the previous local plan said that we would build those homes in the town centre. We would build them close to the high street, close to the supermarkets, close to the stations, the bus station, and it would be where it's easy to get around without a car. It's easy to commute into London. We are doing that in Sutton, and we're really proud of doing that. We've shown the leadership, and residents have kind of come with us, and they've backed the Lib Dems in Sutton to do so. What is frustrating is the government now taking powers away from councils, centralising the decision. And there are councils that are guilty of not doing enough,
Yep.
but the answer to that is not to take away the powers, it's to make it easier to deliver. Now, one of the things we've always called for is allowing councils to borrow to build council housing, which we're not able to do at the moment. Investing in building, investing in infrastructure that then saves us money down the line is something that no reasonable person would oppose. Councils were encouraged to invest in properties over the last couple of decades, but we were never able to build our kind of our council infrastructure, our council housing infrastructure itself, which is boggles the mind. And you think about all those councils who've gone bankrupt around London. Croydon, just next door to us, is an example where Labour and the Conservatives take it in turns to bankrupt that council through unwise borrowing decisions. Whereas if they borrowed and invested in council housing, they would have the stock to house their residents and provide good quality homes for their residents. So what's disappointing is government taking powers away, taking powers from councils, instead of making it easier to do the things that we all want to do. So we want to see that from the government rather than that concentration of powers in the hands of ministers in Whitehall who do not understand what the right decision is for Sutton, for Kingston, for Merton, for Wandsworth. Lib Dems are all about giving people power to make decisions at the most local level possible, and that's got to be done through giving councils more powers over where homes are built and give them the ability to do so.
Yeah, and also I'm quite concerned about if they say you haven't got a local plan in place, they can then override all your decisions and put houses anywhere. You've got developers who are absolutely thinking this is Christmas. We can build. They put a moratorium on new statutory consultees, water companies being the major one, which you have concerns about. So we've got to work to, well, we have to work to stop them, right? The government centralizing, riding roughshod over local developments.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've had a really good example recently of where they've overruled local plans. So the gas holder development in Motspur Park, where Kingston Council rejected that proposal initially primarily because it The impact on metropolitan open land. My concerns as the MP for Sutton and Cheam were about all the traffic access for that development coming along Green Lane, which runs into Worcester Park in my constituency. That would overload an existing congested road. It would overload an already congested high street central road in Worcester Park. And what we needed was mitigations to make that work. The development came with no mitigations to make that work. You know, we know we need to build homes, but the plans as presented would just wouldn't work. Instead, the mayor called that decision in. It's gone to City Hall and he's approved it. But again, with no additional mitigations. And he's overruled a local council planning decision. And again, we need to build homes. Everybody accepts we need to build homes. And when councils show leadership in developments to build homes, they should be rewarded, not where. In this case, those powers were taken away from the councils, and local residents' voices and local elected representatives' voices have been overruled and ignored.
It's a concern. I guess you have to just watch this space. Going to Andy Burnham, you've said he's chickening out on climate change decisions, reining back on EV decisions, and we've got the North Sea. Do we use a Jackdaw field or don't we? We should be using our own gas fields because at the moment we're importing very dirty LPG from America. It's actually cleaner to mine our own fields and use our own liquid petroleum gas.
Now, I hear that argument. The challenge is that when Jackdaw and Rosebank open, that gas and oil are traded on the international market. It does not provide any benefits to us in price or in availability. If another country will pay the price, they get that oil. It gives us no additional security. It gives us no guarantee of demand. And the companies that are operating these fields and extracting this gas have no incentive to sell it to a domestic customer over the international market. So it is just not true that this will make it better for Britain. Now, the arguments about additional jobs and additional employment security for the refining of these products, that is a fair argument. We've always said that transition to renewables needs to be a just transition, and that means making sure that people are retrained, that industrial facilities are reused. I do a lot of work on sustainable aviation fuel, and a lot of the facilities that are currently used to process oil and gas can be reprovisioned to providing sustainable aviation fuel, which is going to be how we achieve climate impact reductions are from aviation. But Andy Burnham has always been a mayor who has been popular. He's never made decisions that have upset people. And I fear that just like Rosebank and Jackdaw, he's been pushed into that by largely by the right-wing press, and by people who are worried about the cost of their gas and electricity, and they are convinced that this will make it cheaper. It will not. And he's not standing up and explaining and showing the leadership you need to say, well, no, actually, we do need to be making sure this money is invested not in additional fossil fuel extraction, but is invested in renewables. So money that is going into these projects is going there and not into renewables. And that's the problem. The EV targets, he is giving into big car companies who, for them, it is easier and it is cheaper to continue to produce petrol and diesel cars. But we know that the only way we're going to continue to improve the quality of our air and we're going to continue to reduce the climate impact of transport is to transition to EVs. And he again is showing his weakness in not showing the leadership and not showing the reasons why that needs to happen. And I fear that Andy Burnham is setting a bit of a theme that he's going to chicken out all the difficult decisions. They're going to upset people, they're going to upset the right-wing press, they're going to get criticism from Reform and the Conservatives, and he's going to take the easy way out. And if he does continue to do that, he's going to end up in the same place that Keir Starmer did, which is being undermined from within his own party and losing the benefit of the doubt that many people will give a new leader when they just show they don't have the courage to their own to deliver their own convictions.
Yeah, he's trying to. It seems he's trying to keep everybody happy at the moment and not making
Absolutely.
those big policy decisions that he might have to make in the future, which might upset a few people. But hey, that's what he's
Exactly.
there for, isn't it?
Exactly that.
But we'll move on to exam results today. Have you had any feedback from your local schools about how they've all done?
Yeah. Yeah, we have. I think the figures show that Sutton has got the second highest pass rate in London. Really proud of that as a borough. We've always said that we've got some of the brightest, best kids and teachers in London here, and you know the league tables seem to show that once again. So congratulations to all the kids getting their results today, and to the parents and to the teachers and to everyone who supports. All that achievement around, because you know, my parents were both teachers. I've been through the process as we all have. I know how difficult it can be, but you know, it does take a village to raise a child and to make sure that they succeed. Sutton seems to be very good at doing that. So I'm really proud. And we've also had the new app that's being operated.
Yeah, so I was going to ask about that.
Yeah, we spoke to one school, and actually, it's quite interesting to know the process. So the schools have to opt in, and then the children themselves have to opt in. So one of our schools, I think Cheam High, had 300 out of their 320 students or so signed up and actually getting the results through this app. It sounds a little bit advanced to me. I can remember getting my my piece of paper with the numbers on, and seeing those scores, those results years and years ago. Maybe the app takes a little bit of the fun out of it, you know, ripping into that envelope. I did see last week some of the kids wandering around in the evening with those envelopes. So I guess that still does still happen. Maybe there's a backup. But yeah, great day. Congratulations to everybody who got what they worked hard for. But again, you always have to say, and the truth is, it's not the end of everything. You know, you can, you know, the famous Jeremy Clarkson line, which we get every year. I think this year he was saying he's sitting having a in his own pub with a private chef, and he got a U and two Fs or something like that. So, you know, you can still make it. You can still make it, whatever you end up with today.
Well, let's hope we have some more budding engineers that build some bridges for us in the future as well.
Absolutely.
So, finally, you are having a moment on LBC on Saturday with Henry Riley, I believe, who used to work at Radio Jackie.
Oh, does he? So it was last Saturday. Yes. Yeah, I was talking about the Clacton by-election result, and as you might guess, I was slightly cynical about how much it validated Nigel's claim that he was loved and adored by all. You might have expected what I might have said, but you know, Henry, brilliant job up there, and yeah, really does show the benefits of you know, radio stations where you can kind of cut your teeth and go on to the big shiny
Well, he
global radio.
cut his teeth at Radio Jackie, and I met remember many days doing news with him and having a bit of a banter across the airways.
Oh,
And yeah,
brilliant.
he's a great lad. So I
He
think
is.
that's it. I think we've covered everything. So
Brilliant.
thank you for coming on to Radio Jackie again.
Always a
And
pleasure, Jackie.
yeah, interesting points, and I look forward to our next catch up.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. Lovely to talk to you.